This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my amazing and curious friends. My name is Jennifer, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek inside the real world of scientists, engineers, and experts as they solve problems in their jobs using creativity, cooperation, and critical thinking. And now please welcome to the show my podcast partner, Galactic Space Geek, Jeff Gagne.
Hello, Jennifer. I got a question for you real quick. Have you ever seen that emoji where the brain explodes? That
yes.
is me right now. We are going to be talking about my favorite topic in the entire solar system today. I can't wait to get started.
Well, hold on. We have to let our listeners know what is the question that we're solving today.
What do you need to know to operate a rover on Mars?
Oh, now I understand. It's about the rovers, the Mars rovers. Okay, tell us who our amazing guest is, Jeff.
That's right, Jennifer. Today we are talking to Brian Franz. He is a mechanical engineer working with some of the coolest people on the planet at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and he has worked directly on both the Mars Perseverance rover and currently the Mars Curiosity rover. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Welcome to the show, Brian. Yay!
Hello, Jennifer. Hello, Jeff. Thank you for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
Oh, we are super excited to have you. This is all about Mars. Jeff, you must be going crazy here.
I'm trying to hold myself in. Jennifer, I don't know if you're going to get any questions in edgewise, so I'll try to have to hold myself back.
Well, go right ahead.
Let's start with the basic question of Mars missions. That could mean any number of things right now. Brian, can you tell us specifically what you do?
Of course I can, Jeff. So I am a mechanical engineer, like you said, working in the Mars missions for NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. I specifically work on the Mars 2020 mission, the Perseverance rover that just landed. I helped test and design parts of that rover. And now I currently am also working on the surface operations, so analyzing the data coming back from the Curiosity mission, which was Perseverance's predecessor.
Well, that's okay. So cool. And so the question that Brian is here to talk to us about is, what do you need to know to operate a rover on Mars? Now, I'm guessing this is not like a very simple answer, is it, Brian?
I would have to agree with that answer, that it's not simple in that sense.
Let's talk a little bit about Mars as compared to Earth. So if you go to Mars, what's it going to be like as compared to Earth?
You know, Jennifer, that's a great question because Mars is very different from Earth. One of the biggest differences is Mars is smaller than Earth. And what that causes is a lower gravity for things that are on the Martian surface. To be specific here, we are looking at a 38% difference in gravity, meaning that Mars has 38% of Earth's gravity.
Whoa, and less than half.
Less than half.
All right.
So what does that mean if you're trying to operate something on the planet? Does it have to be heavier? I'm trying to figure this out. You understand engineering better than me.
Sure. So when we operate something on Mars, it actually becomes sort of a benefit if we're testing it on Earth first. Because when we're testing something on Earth, it actually weighs more than it will when it actually is on Mars, because the gravity is less. So the force required to do that operation is actually less.
Okay. So with the fact that human beings haven't been to Mars yet, and so far it's all been robots, have we run into any problems with the rovers in that reduced gravity?
Yeah. So the reduced gravity is one of the areas that we have experienced problems in. And one of the other areas is actually the very low reduced atmosphere. And we can go into that in a second. But I'll quickly mention that the gravity, actually, one of the things that it's caused is the surface dust on Mars actually kind of forms in different ways than it does on Earth, because the gravity pulling it towards the surface actually is different. So the way that it actually crumbles into little particles like sand are a very different structure than they would be on Earth. And they actually have caused more wear to our wheels on Mars than we initially expected.
Okay. I just have to say, you guys can't see Jeff and I. We're both sitting here with our mouths wide open. Like, this is the coolest thing we've ever heard.
The dust on Mars is different?
The dust on Mars, small shapes of the dust are different forms because the gravity is different, and they haven't been either eroded in the same way or weathered in the same way or fallen down cliffs in the same way. And all so right. because of those different structures, it does cause differences in the wear on things that come into contact with it. In our case, our wheels.
And is that why the Perseverance rover's wheels were a much different design than the Curiosity rover wheels?
That is 100% correct, Jeff. To take into account that the wheels did not necessarily perform the way that they initially had expected, and corrections probably needed to be made. And so they took what they learned. And obviously, as engineers, we don't just rinse and repeat. We rinse and update and repeat.
That's a great way to put that.
Okay, so, but when did Curiosity go and when did Perseverance go? So like, how much time did you guys have to figure this out to change the different wheels out?
So Curiosity landed in early 2012, I believe.
Okay.
And I remember that because I was a junior in college and just all sorts of excited about that landing. And then obviously Perseverance landed just this past February. So there was this, I guess, simple arithmetic escapes me sometimes. I think that your listeners could probably do it better than I could right now. But I think that's about 8 years difference, 9 years difference in terms of the general landing periods. And so there was a little bit of time to operate and understand and learn and then, you know, apply what we've learned to the new rover.
Okay. So I have a question. So if you aren't on Mars, how do you know that the tires are wearing differently?
So that comes from all the different cameras that we have on the rover. So every so often, there will be certain images that are taken from all different angles on the rover, wherever it can, and those images will be sent back to the respective teams that do the analysis, and they will determine, are we seeing differences? Are things the same? Do we need to do a different analysis? And they will go ahead and figure out what the best course of action is.
So before we move on, you mentioned the atmosphere difference between the Earth and Mars, and we want to get to that. I have one last question on the wheels for Curiosity, because you said you moved to the Curiosity surface operations team, and that's the one that's been up there for a long time and has the damage to the wheels. Obviously, you can't go repair the wheels. So how has JPL changed or adjusted what you're doing with the Curiosity rover, maybe to make the wheels last longer and make the whole mission last longer?
So that gets into what we call our Tiger Team analysis, which actually I can't go into too much detail about.
Okay.
To be honest.
Oh, there you go, Jeff. You can't ask him that.
When something super anomalous happens on Mars, that we have to form a Tiger Team to go and really figure out what the problem is and what the solution is, those are carefully guarded secrets by JPL and are not readily disseminated to most people because that's what allows JPL to be the best at what they do.
To be JPL.
Yep. And that makes total sense. I mean, I just think that that's amazing. So, okay, let me ask you this. How long do you expect Curiosity to last, do you think? Because I know, like, we know the Hubble Space Telescope kind of has, it's lasted 30 years. They hope it's going to get some more. Do you have an about guess for how long it's going to, or are we just hoping it lasts for a really long time?
I would keep my fingers crossed and hope that it keeps lasting for a very long time. And awesome. I have every confidence about the teammates that I work with and those that designed it that were on the team before me, that if something does go wrong, we will form a Tiger Team and we'll figure out a way around it. Because, you know, there have been problems. Curiosity's been on the surface of Mars for a very long time.
Time already.
I have lost track of the number of days past its expiration date that it was supposed to be. Because I think we've more than doubled its original mission. And so I don't want to speak for everybody, but I personally kind of like to think of it as, you know, keep moving until somebody decides it's not worth moving anymore.
Okay. Well,
and that's what engineers do, right? That's exactly why being an engineer is so cool, is you don't have to worry about an expiration date. You just keep changing things and moving along and testing. This is what I love. So kids, this is why being an engineer is really cool.
And being a galactic space geek, I have been teaching kids and families about the Curiosity rover for a very long time. And whenever any of them ask me about Perseverance and how long, I just point them to Curiosity, say, it's been up there for 9 years. It's still going. they don't have a stop date for that one. Yeah. So Perseverance is going to grow up right alongside you, is what I tell the kids.
And that's a great way to put it. It really is, because I'm hoping that the Perseverance rover can continue to inspire people like the Curiosity rover did for me when I was a bit older than the audience was, but space is one of those things. One of my favorite space geeks, Bill Nye, says space unites us.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Very much agree. All right. Now, before we lose that point, the difference in Earth's atmosphere and Mars' atmosphere, can you tell us about what that difference is and how that affects those rovers?
Of course. This is actually one of my favorite aspects about the difference between Earth and Mars. And Martian atmosphere is much, much less dense than the Earth atmosphere. So it is about 0.9%. That's 0.9% of the volume of Earth's atmosphere. Yes. And that causes a lot of problems. The low pressure and the low temperature are the two biggest problems that that causes. For the audience's perspective, the average surface temperature on Earth is somewhere around 51 to 52 degrees Fahrenheit.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Give or take, maybe probably 5 degrees. The average surface temperature on Mars is about minus 80 degrees Fahrenheit.
That's cold. So
super cold. Super, super cold.
Oh, my God.
It's a 130 degree difference on average.
Well, okay. Exactly. I'm in Florida. It's probably even more than that, right? Like, we're in the summer, so it's an average of 85 to 90 degrees. Holy cow, that is cold.
So
very cold.
The rovers are mostly electronics, right?
That they are.
And electronics and cold don't like each other very much, do they?
No, they do not.
So as an engineering team, how are you guys solving those problems?
So we do what we call test, test, and more tests. So when you're dealing with anything from, you know, the electronic systems to the mechanical systems, and I can speak more to the mechanical systems because I personally am a mechanical engineer, although I have to deal with the electronic systems as well because I've helped operate the test beds in which more than just mechanical stuff is operating, the electrical operations are happening as well. You really have to mimic the entire Martian environment and test in that environment to make sure that what's going on is going to work the way you think it is. And there's certain times where electronics just won't be able to operate at those temperatures. And so some of the ways that we solve those things is by actually installing heaters around the different parts of the rover. We activate those heaters to warm up certain areas of the rover because the surface of Mars is so cold that these mechanisms won't operate unless we heat them up a little bit.
Oh, I need to learn more about that. That's something I never share with the families. There's heaters all over it too.
So are the heaters programmed then to come on at certain times? Is that how you communicate with the rovers?
Yep. Everything on the rover has to be basically autonomous because we can't directly communicate with it and, you know, drive it as you would say with the joystick, right? There's the communication delay between Mars and Earth.
I was hoping you'd mention that.
Yeah. It's 7 minutes one way, right? So if we send a command over to the rover and say, hey, go do this, it's going to take 7 minutes to get there. Then the rover is going to have to download that from the satellite that we send it over to. And then, you know, it can execute what it needs to do. And then it'll send the data back up to the satellite, and that satellite will send it back over to us. And that takes another 7 minutes back. And so the process by which all of these different things have to happen, including, Jennifer, what you had mentioned, these activations and turning on of the heaters, okay, are all happening autonomously based off of different cues and keys that the rover is taking in as it's doing its work.
I mean, so you send something and then you have to wait about 15 minutes or so to figure out if it was successful? Is that what you're telling me?
Assuming that what it's going to do was instantaneous, because sometimes activities on the surface itself could take a while.
Oh my gosh. So you could be like, let's hope we hear from it in an hour and that it worked, right?
Yeah. It very well could be.
Oh, that's hard. That's tough.
Okay, I got to jump in with, you are hopefully about to answer a question that will help me fill in a blank that I've had kids ask me before, which is when we tell them about that communications delay, a lot of times kids will ask me, okay, so what do those rover programmers do in between sending? Do they get to like play video games, or what are they doing in between sending the command and waiting for the result?
So that's a great question. And no, they're not just sitting around playing video games, although I'm sure some of them wish they were. But most often, because operating a rover on a different planet is so complex, they're basically anticipating, hey, if everything that we just sent over there went correctly, what do we think is going to happen next?
I like
very that. Good.
Every minute counts when you're planning that kind of stuff, because if something goes wrong, well, at least you have an idea of, okay, we're going to do this, this, and this. What can't we do given that this other thing may have gone wrong? So always having a plan ahead is what those rover drivers are thinking about a lot of the time. And also, if they're doing something that might be new, then what could go wrong? And if it does, how would they recover from it?
I mean, yes. So you're predicting like an engineer, you're theorizing, you have all of these different things. I love all of this thinking. So the question was, what do you need to know to operate a rover? So we talked about gravity and we talked about atmosphere and we talked about testing. How do you test for atmosphere on the planet Earth?
That's a wonderful question, Jennifer. And I actually was part of a team that commissioned what we call a test bed to do exactly that for a certain portion of the Perseverance rover. And so what happens is you assemble your test apparatus, your test rig, as we would call it, inside this chamber, right? We call it a thermal vacuum chamber. And the thermal aspect of that means that we can control the temperature of that chamber once we close the door. And the vacuum part of that.
Mars.
Exactly. You got it, Jeff. And the vacuum part of that is we can actually pull air and atmosphere out of that chamber. And so we can simulate both the temperature and the pressure that it would be on Mars. So we are literally testing our hardware as if it were operating on the surface of Mars.
Oh my.
That is just cool.
That is super cool.
Okay. It's a lot of fun.
I bet. I'm sure.
You have a cool job.
Yeah. That led me directly to another question. So in that test rig, because I want to use the lingo now, in that test rig, how long does it take you to drop the inside of that from Earth temperature and atmosphere down to Mars temperature and atmosphere? Is that a long time?
It typically can take quite a long time because we have to take into account the hardware that's inside of the chamber. Sometimes if you change temperatures too quickly, certain materials can have adverse effects. And so we have to know exactly what's inside that chamber to understand how quickly we're allowed to change the temperature of the chamber.
Material science gets you.
Material science is actually one of the most difficult parts of operating on.
My son's a material science engineer. He would have said that right away. Yeah, materials are cool.
Man, when I was reading your resume and I saw the material science, I was wondering if I would figure out a way of getting you to explain what material science is, what studying that means. And I think your explanation of you need to know everything that you just put into the chamber, how it's going to react to the chamber. That was the simplest, easiest explanation of material science I've ever heard. That's cool. That is a good way to describe that.
Yeah, I would say that there's probably a bit more to go into it, but yeah, it is definitely, you're playing a temperature game with the materials. And I would say that you're obviously playing the pressure game as well because it's a thermal vacuum chamber, but the temperature really is one of the biggest things that we have to solve when it comes to operating a rover on Mars because it's just so cold.
Okay.
It's incredible.
So I know our question was, what do you need to know to operate a rover on Mars? I want to jump ahead just a little bit because I really am geeking out. How are the rovers that are on Mars, both Perseverance and Curiosity, which has been there for so long, how are they helping us get ready for humans to eventually get there?
That is a great question. They are basically trying to understand what the, I guess, geology and chemistry is the best way to describe that, is of Mars.
Okay.
And understand, is there a potential for humans to use any of those materials if we were to be there? So on Perseverance, for example, one of the very small, what we call proof of concept experiments, is called MOXIE. And MOXIE basically takes in the atmosphere of Mars that's mostly carbon dioxide and breaks down that carbon dioxide to produce oxygen. And so by proving that that's the case, we can potentially say, well, there's a proof of concept to say we can produce breathable oxygen and air for a human via the atmosphere using one of these, a much larger, obviously, version of these machines.
That's so cool.
And the Perseverance rover has this MOXIE. Has it already been activated? I know it's been watching the Ingenuity helicopter and taking lots of pictures and videos. Has the MOXIE already been activated to do this process?
I can't speak directly to that because it's not a team that I'm a part of. It's an instrument that's actually co-developed between JPL and another institute that I don't remember exactly what it was, but I know it's in the plans. It could have happened already.
That's one of those things for all of us to look up.
I would encourage, if you want to know more about that, just type in all caps, M-O-X-I-E, MOXIE.
Okay.
And it could have been doing something at this point. I'm not as tied in with that instrument as other people are.
Well, So let's talk about what you do in your surface operations job. So what does that mean? What do you do specifically with that, with Curiosity?
Sure. So like we were talking about, there's people that plan out what the rovers are going to do, each what we call a sol. So on Earth, we have today, and on Mars, we have to sol or solmorrow.
I got it.
So you kind of get where that was going with it. It's fun to try to figure out where exactly you can fit sol in, but a sol on Mars is like a day on Earth.
Okay.
And so when the rover executes whatever it was scheduled to execute, it sends back the information, and there's a group of us, myself being part of that team, that analyzes that information as it comes back and says, did this happen successfully? If so, are we ready to move on to the next activity? If not, what happened? Why did it go wrong? And what can we do to either fix it, or what should be held off on because we need to figure out what we need to do to fix it?
Oh, again, engineering, right? Problem solving, right?
Sounds very thorough. Like you're not moving on until you figure out what happened with the last one. And you're also figuring out if you can still make that last one work if it didn't.
Exactly. It's the whole idea that we can't exactly send a repairman if something breaks. We kind of need to, before something breaks, we have all sorts of checks that can go off that say, hey, something went wrong, nothing's broken, but you need to figure this out. And so we go through all of our checks and make sure that we understand what's going on and proceed accordingly.
Okay. So for as long as you've been on the Curiosity Surface Ops team, what is the coolest piece of data that's come back?
That you can share with us.
Yes, of course. Of course.
The coolest piece of data for me is I get to see the images of just the terrain every day that they come back.
First.
Right? So it's actually not necessarily something that I'm analyzing with the team that I'm a part of for the Curiosity rover. It's, you know, I have access to all the pictures and everything that all the cameras are taking. And so I can just kind of, I can wake up in the morning and, you know, some people might go out and see a sunset. I can just stroll through Martian landscape photos that we took over the past couple of days.
Okay. Now you're just rubbing it in. Now you're just hurting my feelings here.
I mean, do you ever stop for a minute and say, this is so stinking cool because this planet is so far away and here we are. Humans, we've created this really cool thing. And again, we know it's not just NASA that's done this, that's put rovers on Mars. But do you ever just stop for a minute and go, this is just so cool. Look at this other planet.
I have to often remind myself that I'm working. I need to be, you know, make sure that I'm not just gazing off into the images and enjoying it. It is still my job. I do have to, you know, produce data products and all those types of things to, you know, say that the rover is healthy. For me, the coolest thing is it just kind of puts into perspective what humans are able to do.
Yes.
And that's kind of the biggest message that I would give to the audience for the kids that are listening is there's a lot that we as humans are capable of, and you're the next generation. Show us what you can do.
Exactly. That's
fantastic. Oh, I just had a question that I wanted to ask, and I'm so jealous of you seeing those pictures and just scrolling through whatever you want. We take for granted, I teach space all the time, that the rovers just work. We sent the Perseverance rover there and we just kind of took for granted that it was going to land safely and the sky crane would fly away and it would start roving and take pictures and the helicopter would work. Being one of the engineers that works for JPL that are doing these mind-blowing, amazing humans can do this stuff. Does it ever bother you, or what do you say to people when they just kind of expect that you're going to succeed? Like, they just expect that this rover 140 million miles away, 7 light minutes away, is just going to land itself, and we're sure of it. And I don't know a better way to phrase it.
No, that's an excellent question. I will first say that I can't get mad at anybody who wants to talk to me about the Mars rovers and, you know, what's going on with those. That's just kind of not possible. But
fair point.
The whole aspect of people becoming complacent and comfortable with, you know, it's just going to work. It's hard to come up with the evidence against that because it's all bad evidence. And you don't really want to talk about that for the most part. But it is one of the reasons why I can smile about it, because I know that the testing that went in behind it is the reason why the public is, you know, very much so comfortable saying those types of things. And I don't know if most people know this, but for every rover that we send to Mars, one stays at JPL. Mm-hmm. And we test everything on Earth before we ever test it on Mars, because we can fix the rover on Earth, can't fix it on Mars. So it's one of those things where even the people at JPL at times are like, oh, can't you wait till the rover lands? It's like, don't you mean if?
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Let's not get complacent here, right? You know, I mean, we're all very confident in what we do, but it is a difficult, difficult thing that we're talking about doing.
Yeah. And sure. It takes, what, tens of thousands of hours and hundreds or so of scientists and engineers. I mean, it's just really cool. And this is something that kids can aspire to do. As you said, they're the next generation. So along those lines, we like to have all of our experts offer a challenge for the kids. So I know the challenge for me would be like, hey, let's go to Mars and see how it works. But can they do something on Earth that would kind of simulate a little bit of Mars or give an idea of what you guys have to deal with? What do you think?
Sure. I mean, as much as I would love to say, hey, here's how you go build your own thermal vacuum chamber and, you know, here's how you pump it down to this coal. No, that's actually very, very difficult and expensive and dangerous. Please don't try to build one of those at home, kids. But what you can do is experiment with the differences in gravity. Now, mimicking exactly what the Martian gravity is a little bit more difficult. But on Earth, we've developed a set of what's called simple machines. And one of those simple machines is called the pulley. And pulleys are there to reduce the amount of work needed to lift a certain object usually. So a challenge that I would give to some of the kids that are out there would be to try to set up a simple apparatus using pulleys. And you can do it in kind of these type of steps where you tie a string to some sort of container or cup and, you know, fill that cup with maybe a pound of material. You can fill with water. You could fill with sand. It doesn't really matter.
Okay.
And before you do anything, just by yourself, you know, just pull the string up and lift, you know, lift it 6 inches off the ground and just kind of feel, do it a couple of times, feel how difficult that is. It's not going to be very difficult. It's only a pound, but now set up a pulley, maybe fix that pulley, tape it to a chair or a table or something, and, you know, run the string over it. So with that, you know, 1 pound material still in the cup or the container and pull it again and feel the difference. And what you're doing there is simulating a lower gravity. So maybe not exactly what Mars gravity is, but by using those pulleys, you are reducing the amount of force needed to lift the mass in that cup, which is exactly what we do when we're testing stuff on Earth in order to make it work on Mars.
That's
what a
awesome.
Fantastic connection right there at the end. This challenge that you just gave all of our listeners, that is exactly the same stuff that you guys are doing with the real rover and the real missions to Mars.
Yes.
I like this pulley system. I can picture our listeners running back to mom and dad when they get to the end of this episode. Mom, dad, can we go to Walmart? I want some pulleys.
Yes. Engineering in action. Absolutely. Yes. At its best. Yes. Well, this has been a fabulous conversation, Brian. We could talk to you forever.
But Jen, don't make it end.
I have learned so much about Mars. So thank you so much for being on our Solve It for Kids podcast.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, Jen and Jeff. This has been so much fun, and I hope the kids enjoy solving it.
What a fantastic interview, and what a terrific challenge. I had no idea where Brian was going to go with the challenge for our listeners, since he works on rovers that rove another planet. But that pulley system thing sounds super awesome. I can't wait to try it.
I know, that sounds so cool. And I mean, I learned so many things about the Mars rover and how the engineers create them and test them over and over. I mean, wow, this was a really, really amazing episode, I think.
And talk about Solve It for Kids. Brian talked about so many different ways that he and all the other engineers at JPL have to solve problems over and over and over again. I mean, it's basically their job.
It totally is their job. So kids, if you want to learn more like Jeff and I do, don't forget to go to our website, solveitforkids.com. We have a page for each episode that we have. There will be a page with information about Brian, where you can find stuff about the Mars rover. We might even throw cool videos on there and some books if you want to learn more about all of this cool stuff they're doing in Mars.
I know, this is going to be fantastic. We will definitely have the link to the Mars rovers, which is mars.nasa.gov, as well as some other information about how kids can have fun with rovers, and maybe even add an activity where you get to build your own rubber band and cardboard rover yourself.
Oh, that sounds amazing. So if any of you kids do that, take a picture of it, and don't forget to upload it or check us out on our Instagram or Facebook or Twitter, which is @KidsSolve, because we would love to hear from you.
Absolutely. And until next time,
we will have another great week of
Solve It for Kids.